Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Got a video you think should be included in our weekly online video pick? Send the link to Brian Lehrer Show at WNYC.org. Put the word video in the subject line. This week's picks include the end game of the Clinton-Obama race in the style of Monty Python. It's very funny, especially if you know the classic Monty Python Black Knight scene. See our online video picks at WNYC.org. Click on video. Now, every 10 years, the U.S. Census Bureau hits the pavement to take statistical measurements of the country. It's a massive process, but one that is critical to our day-to-day government. Everything from congressional seats, electoral votes, and all sorts of government funding allocated from census data. But in my hand, I am holding certainly the slickest result of the U.S. Census. It is the Census Atlas of the United States. It's an oversized book filled with hundreds of beautiful maps reflecting all sorts of interesting figures about this country. So for the month of June, we're going to spend some time each Thursday digging into the Atlas. We're obviously not going to get to every map, but we'll try and highlight some of the more interesting examples. So joining us for this series every Thursday in June is Mark Perry, chief of the Population Distribution Branch of the U.S. Census. He was one of the main editors of the new Atlas. Mark, welcome to WNYC. Thanks so much for doing this with us.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
And we should say right off the bat that we have posted images of the maps we're going to be discussing today on our website, so you can follow along at home. Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. And while people are getting there, and by way of background, Mark, the Census Bureau used to print an atlas every 10 years with every census they conducted, but this is the first one that they've done since the 1920s.
And that's correct.
I dare say it's worth the wait. But I want to try and describe it for folks. It's oversized, mm-hmm. full color, and it weighs, what would you say, 7 pounds?
It's about 7 pounds, yep.
And so
Think coffee table quality publication.
Right, totally. Sturdy, big coffee table atlas kind of book. And why was this practice suspended after the 1920 census?
As I understand it, the last atlas came out in the last sort of comprehensive big population and housing atlas that we did came out in 1925, I believe it was. Following the 1930 census, we were in the throes of the Depression. In 1940, we were at war. 1950, we were coming out of war. And I believe for the decades after that, there were just sort of various issues came up that we weren't able to do the publication. But gearing up for Census 2000, certainly one of the goals for the publications after Census 2000 was to finally get around and to do another sort of comprehensive atlas that would be a nice a print volume, even in the age of the internet. There's certainly still a place for a printed volume, something that's going to be on a shelf for decades to come.
So let's dive right into the first map mm-hmm. that we've got here. And listeners, if you're up on our slideshow, this is slide 1 of 8, and it's a full U.S. map that shows population distribution from 2000. Mark, describe this briefly to us. People looking at the site will see that there are red dots everywhere, and
sure
most
thing.
Of the red dots are in the east.
Yeah. So what we have here is we have a map of the 50 states and Washington, D.C., Puerto Rico. This is a map of red dots. Each red dot is 1,000 people in the country. And so what you can imagine is the eastern part of the country from, say, southern Maine all the way down to northern Virginia, it's basically one solid red blob of sort of uninterrupted population settlement. That's what we sometimes call megalopolis. And so sort of in the eastern half of the country, there's an awful lot of red, and there's not much tan color, which is the area that doesn't have many people. Although you can see a few blotches of tan. In South Florida, where the Everglades are, there's sort of a patch without any dots in it, so there's nobody living there. Same thing in the south part of Georgia, and I believe that's the Okefenokee Swamp. Upstate New York and the Adirondacks, and a couple other areas. But the point is, on the basically the eastern half of the United States is pretty regularly settled.
Yeah, and looking at the swaths that you're talking about as, you know, blocks of red, even though it's really lots of little dots, but there's so much population in these areas that they look like patches of red on this map, no one will be surprised that the Northeast from, say, D.C. up through Boston looks that way on the map. But I'm looking at another one pretty close to it, which goes from, it looks like southern Virginia, maybe the Norfolk area, down through Charlotte and Raleigh-Durham and all the way to Atlanta. That's
correct.
Become
That's,
quite a population a corridor.
It has been. That's the Interstate 85 corridor, as some people call it, or the Piedmont corridor. And there's been a huge amount of population growth there over the last couple of decades. And it's really one of them. If you were to take the same map from, say, 1970 or 1980, that little area of I-85 in the Carolinas is one of the only areas where it's really, really changed.
Yes, and another one up Portland through Seattle, up in the Northwest, now pretty wet red. But let's go look at two maps side by side. So this is slide 2 of 8 and 3 of 8 if you're on our website. And this is a map of population density from 1880 and a map of population density from 2000. And I gather you found this beautiful 1880 map somewhere deep in the archives.
We did. This is a map from one of the statistical atlases that was done in the late 19th century. There's really just sort of a great legacy of atlases from that era, from 1870, 1880, 1890. So one of the things we wanted to do in the book was to include historical content. And sometimes that meant taking old data and making maps. And in a few cases, we actually just sort of lifted the actual image from the earlier atlas. So that map is, we did nothing to it other than to add a title and a legend. And otherwise, it's sort of the pure historical content from that.
And it doesn't, in a way, it doesn't look that different from the map today. Certainly, the density is in the Northeast, little swatches in the Southeast, a bit around San Francisco, not so much L.A.
Mm-hmm,
yet,
mm-hmm.
Down around San Diego near the border a bit. One thing that jumps out at me is that the Miami area is completely unpopulated.
Yeah, in that part of the 19th century, nobody lived in South Florida. If you look in Nevada in the 1880 map, nobody lived in southern Nevada. Everyone was up in the Reno, Virginia City area.
People lived in what is that? Oklahoma City, though.
Yeah, there was a little bit of settlement in the Oklahoma Territory, in the Indian Territory. But certainly, the story that comes out of those two maps, if you're comparing the 1880 and the 2000, is that basically the settlement pattern hasn't changed too much. I mean, those two maps look pretty similar. There are a lot more people in South Florida now. There are a lot more people in California, but overall, I mean, if you kind of squint, the two maps look pretty darn similar.
Just real quick, because I want to go on to the next map, but. The first one we talked about with all the red dots was population distribution, and this is population density. Is there really a difference?
Not so much. I mean, that first map was, we are trying to be very precise by using dots to sort of show where the people were living. This one's using isolines, so it's a little bit more artistic. It's a little bit less precise. Just sort of a different style. And so when we did the 2000 map, we tried as much as possible to make it look like that 1880 map so that it would be easier for people to sort of compare the two.
What about the artistry of it all? I love looking at maps. I find them so beautiful, especially when they're well done. I guess there must be a field of cartography, which is sort of the science of map making, and then folks from the design world get into it.
Yeah, and that's actually the part of the effort here that I was least involved in. I mean, my background is in demography. I'm certainly not a cartographer, although working on this project was like an apprenticeship, and I feel like maybe a junior cartographer. But there's a real art and a science to it, and we were fortunate to have great cartographers working on sort of all aspects of the project. So they they did a, I think, just a bang up job with that 2000 map. To they gave it the real antique look to make it look as much as possible like the earlier one. And Mark, it's just wonderful.
Mark Perry is my guest, and he'll be with us every Thursday at this time through the month of June. He's chief of the Population Distribution Branch at the U.S. Census and one of the main editors of the beautiful new U.S. Census Atlas, this oversized coffee table book. And we are going to put some slides from it up on our website each Thursday, as we have done today. If you're just tuning in, why don't you join everybody at WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, and you'll see the link to the slideshow. And we are on now maps number 4 and 5 out of 8. And in a way, these are my favorite, the ones with the arrows.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's see. Actually, let me get this right. This is just number 4 by itself. And it's red arrows and blue arrows showing the migration between California and other states, 1955 to 1960, and 1995 to 2000. What are we looking at here?
Well, one of the real stories, from the 2000 census was that we sort of, in our migration data, we saw for the first time that California was no longer the destination state for the rest of the country the way it had always been.
And it's unbelievable. For those of you who can't look at it, this is so striking. There's a huge red arrow, which represents the 1955 to 60 migration, going from a number of points, very much including New York and including Illinois and the Detroit area and the Minneapolis-St. Paul area and western Iowa and St. Louis, Texas, to California. Huge red arrow from all these points to California.
Yes. And the story in the 1950s was that California gained net migration with every other state in the country except for Nevada. So in other words, people moved to and from California with all these other states. And in every case except Nevada, more people were moving to California than from it.
Now, 1995 to 2000, represented by the series of blue arrows, shows that the flow is the other way. California is no longer a destination state, but a state that it's great to be from, as they say in Ohio. And so people from California are going to the nearby states. They're going to Nevada. They're going to Arizona. They're going to Oregon and Washington, also out to Colorado, back to Texas, back to Georgia, people moving from California to North Carolina, maybe into that red swath we were looking at before in the Raleigh-Durham or Charlotte areas, and it looks like they're coming to Albany.
Yeah, it's a completely different relationship than in the 1950s. I mean, people leaving California are a major force of population growth in every state in the western part of the country, and even in some parts of other parts of the country as well. You know, Arkansas, northwest Arkansas saw quite a bit of migration from California.
There's one big exception, which we'll get to in a minute. But do you document the reasons at the Census Bureau for this out-migration from California now?
Well, we generally don't ask why people move, but certainly there were a confluence of a few things that happened in California in the 1990s. And the biggest thing was just sort of economics. Most people who move are working age people, and job related reasons for moving are paramount. You know, they might say they're moving for climate or family or other reasons, but certainly if you don't have a job, then nothing else really matters. California in the early 1990s had some economic hard times and saw just very, very large out-migration.
So here's the big exception, which might blow your mind, listeners. The one state that is still sending population to California
is
New York.
Yes.
Why?
I think the certainly one of the stories there is housing prices. California has become an expensive state. If you're living in Idaho or Montana or other parts of the West, you might still want to move to California, but in the late 1990s, it was getting very expensive. There aren't many parts of the country that are more expensive than California, but New York happens to be one of them.
Let's go on to map number 5, another series of arrows, and this is the outmigration of the foreign-born, 1995 to 2000. Now explain this. This is first-generation immigrants who settle for a while in some place first and then move elsewhere within the country?
Correct. These are people who said that they were born outside of the United States. These two maps, I think we're looking at two maps here, they are showing sort of where the foreign-born people were moving among the states. And it's there were 6 states, according to Census 2000, that had more than 1 million foreign-born residents. And that was California, New York, Texas, Florida, Illinois, and New Jersey. And so these arrow maps are really just kind of showing the interconnectedness of those states and their foreign-born populations.
And it's another reason that people are moving out of New York and out of California. Maybe the economy's changing. Housing prices are certainly changing in recent years. But also, these two states just get so many immigrants. And in general, second-generation immigrants start to move.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I'm glad you raised that. One of the reasons lots of people are moving out of California and also moving out of New York is because of immigration and not for reasons that are generally sort of talked about. Many of the people who are leaving New York State each year are foreign-born people who, they might have immigrated to New York, stay there for a year or two, get their bearings, and move somewhere else. So they're counted as sort of out migrants from New York.
I want to jump ahead to the final slide. So listeners, we're going to run out of time. So if you're on the page, we want to jump to slide 8 of 8. And this is the percent residing in their state of birth in 2000.
Yeah, and that's a great map. We asked people, where were you born? And and for people who are born overseas, they'll give that country. But within this country, they'll indicate which state they were born. And in the western states, there are relatively few people. For instance, in Nevada, very few people who live in Nevada were actually born there, and that's probably not a surprise to anybody. But there are a couple areas where they're just sort of really, really high shares of their population.
And let me just get to one thing, because we're going to run out of time. And this is, I think, maybe the most interesting thing in our conversation today. The New Orleans area.
Yes.
Very dark blue. People stay there. And Katrina, this map is pre-Katrina.
Correct.
And 10 seconds, Mark, Katrina changed that.
It sure did. I mean, and one of the stories that came out from Katrina was sort of the deep ties that people in Louisiana had to their state.
And this
map really shows it.
It does, as of 2000. Go check out all these maps at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And Mark Perry from the Census Bureau will be back with more maps next Thursday at the same time. Mark, this was great. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.